Ever catch yourself wondering, like, what's the real deal with success? What really gets someone to the top of their game? Well, we're taking a deep dive into Malcolm Gladwell's Outliers to figure that out. You know, uncover what actually drives those extraordinary achievements we're always hearing about.
Yeah, and he does this really interesting thing where he takes those, like, they pulled themselves up by their bootstraps stories
Oh, totally.
and kind of flips them on their head.
Yeah, exactly. He starts with this guy, Bill Joy. Right, total programming legend. This is the guy who basically wrote the code for how we use computers today. Like, seriously, prodigy, right?
For sure. But what Gladwell does so well is he zooms in on this specific time in Joy's journey. Like, we're talking 1971 at the University of Michigan. They had this time-sharing computer system, which was, like, unheard of back then.
Hmm?
And Joy, he had unlimited access.
See, that's what gets me. When I read that, I was like, hold on. How much of his success was just being in the right place at the right time? Like, yeah, the 10,000 hours matter, but it's what doors those hours open for you.
Right.
It's huge. And it makes you think, how often do we miss those hidden advantages when we're trying to explain how someone became so successful?
It's like those small things that seem insignificant but have this massive ripple effect, especially when they happen at a pivotal moment, like the whole dawn of the computer age.
Yeah.
Makes you rethink all those stories we tell about self-made success.
Right, because so much of it's not just about some magical grit that only certain people have. It's about opportunity. It's about timing, things that most people don't even realize are factors. Which reminds me of this other story Gladwell talks about, someone who, like, on paper had every advantage, like off the charts intellect, but never really hit that, like, superstar level of success you might expect.
You're talking about Chris Langan, right?
Yeah, Chris Langan.
This is a guy with an IQ close to 200.
It's insane.
Almost impossible to wrap your head around.
I know, right. But his story, it's not one of those, like, groundbreaking achievements or, you know, him being a household name. Gladwell really digs into how Langan struggled with those traditional paths to success, especially in academics.
And that's where he brings in this fascinating comparison. Robert Oppenheimer.
Right.
The Manhattan Project guy.
Right.
Another brilliant physicist.
Yeah.
But from a completely different world. Like, Oppenheimer came from wealth and privilege.
So are we saying Oppenheimer maybe wasn't as naturally gifted as Langan, but he just knew how to work the system?
In a way, yeah. See, Oppenheimer was a pro at navigating those social minefields, you know? He could influence people, persuade them, get them on board with his vision. Skills that Langan never really had the chance to develop.
So even though Oppenheimer had his own issues, he knew how to convince those in power to let him basically develop the atomic bomb. It really makes you think how much those social skills play into success.
Huge factor.
Yeah.
And it's not just about being charming. It's about understanding the whole power dynamic, right? Knowing how to advocate for yourself and honestly being okay with shaking things up a bit when you need to do. Gladwell ties us all back to the work of this sociologist, Annette Laroux. She did a lot of research on parenting styles. Mm-hmm. And she had this idea of concerted cultivation.
Okay. Breakdown time, concerted cultivation sounds kind of intense.
It can be.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, Laroux found that middle-class families tend to really focus on cultivating their kids' talents and opinions. Like, they encourage them to question things, negotiate, interact with adults confidently. It's a very deliberate approach.
So it's like those kids who are signed up for every sport and club, and their parents are always at the school advocating for them, teaching them how to work the system.
Exactly. And
yeah.
Look, it's not necessarily a good or bad thing, but it arms those kids with a certain set of social skills that often give them an edge in those traditional power structures. It's a stark contrast to what you see in a lot of working class families, where it's more of a natural growth approach.
Like, yeah.
They give their kids love and support, obviously, but there's less emphasis on actively shaping their kids' every move.
Which makes sense. When you think about it, if you're raised in an environment where you're encouraged to question authority, you're going to be much more comfortable speaking up in those high stakes situations.
Right. Like a boardroom,
yeah,
or a salary negotiation. And that's where someone like Langan, despite his incredible intellect, faced a real disadvantage. He just hadn't been socialized in the same way. So those spaces where power and influence were concentrated, much harder for him to navigate.
But Gladwell doesn't stop there. He takes this whole idea of what shapes success beyond just individual traits. And he dives into this fascinating world of cultural legacies.
Which brings us to rice paddies. I gotta be honest, when I first read this section, I was so lost.
It does feel like a hard left turn.
Totally.
But stick with me, it all comes together. So Gladwell, he goes deep into the history of rice farming in Asia.
And he really emphasizes how unbelievably demanding it is.
Like, when I realize how much work goes into it, it's not just planting seeds.
Right.
This is a whole system.
It's intense. Constant attention planning, problem solving.
Yeah.
And they're doing this for like 3,000 hours a year.
3,000? Are you kidding me?
No joke.
That's insane. And it's not even just the hours, it's the mental toughness.
Right.
Like, the focus it takes. Gladwell connects that to like those marathon study sessions some cultures are known for.
It's all connected. He's basically saying that this whole legacy of hard work, this meticulousness, the problem solving, it gets passed down through generations. And it even shows up in things like how different cultures approach math.
So their cultural inheritance is like this hidden advantage, shaping their work ethic and how they tackle challenges.
Right. And it really challenges those assumptions we have about what's innate talent versus what's learned behavior.
Yeah.
But then he takes this idea of cultural legacies to a whole other level. With the example of Korean air pilots, remember hearing about those incidents they had back in the 90s?
Vaguely, yeah. What's the Gladwell take?
So back then, Korean Air had a statistically high number of plane crashes. And when they really dug into it, they found that cultural factors were playing a huge role. Like, a big one was the Korean concept of deference to authority.
So the co-pilots were hesitant to question the captain, even if they saw a problem, because of that cultural respect.
It's exactly. Gladwell explains it through this thing called Hofstede's cultural dimensions. Basically, it's this framework for understanding how values differ across cultures. He focuses specifically on something called the Power Distance Index, which measures how comfortable people are with hierarchy and authority.
Okay, so how does this apply to, like, someone listening to this right now?
It makes you think about those dynamics in your own workplace, right? Like, how comfortable are you voicing concerns to your boss, even if it means challenging their authority? Because that dynamic, that comfort level with speaking up, it can make or break a team. And in some cases, it can even affect safety. But Gladwell being Gladwell, he brings us back to another thought-provoking example of someone pushing against those cultural norms. And this time is back on familiar ground.
You're talking about Marita, the student at KIPP Academy.
Right.
Right. What always gets me about her story, it's the sheer dedication. This 12-year-old is getting up before the sun's evened out, putting in crazy hours of schoolwork, all for a shot at a better future.
And that's what's so powerful about her story. It challenges that whole success is a binary thing.
Yeah.
You know, like, you either have it or you don't. It's way more nuanced than that. It's about the choices you make, the sacrifices you're willing to put in.
She's not just waiting for success to happen. She's out there making it happen.
And that's the beauty of outliers. It pushes us to rethink those assumptions about achievement. It's not just about individual grit. It's about recognizing all those other factors,
the
ones we often overlook, whether it's a stroke of luck, a cultural legacy, or even just the guts to step outside our comfort zone.
And maybe realizing that we all have the potential to be outliers in our own way.
Right.
If we understand the rules of the game and we're willing to make those sacrifices.
It's about making those choices and saying, this is what matters to me and I'm going for it.
Exactly. So as you're listening to this, think about it. What opportunities are right there in front of you? What would it take for you to achieve your own version of success? Are you willing to make the bargain? That's what we wanted to leave you with today. Some serious food for thought. This deep dive was crafted just for you. And we hope it sparks some ideas and inspiration. Thanks for joining us on this journey into the heart of outliers.